And now, the continuing adventures of Superhero Speak, episode 29.
Hey, what do Cap and Iron Man do when the rest of the Avengers aren't around and they need help? Well, they call on the West Coast Avengers, of course, and that's what Ben and I did this week. We needed a sub, and we called on our friend, Johnny Fournier from Nerd Unemployed, and he filled in nicely. And if you haven't heard of Johnny, check out his website, nerdunemployed.com. He does a podcast all about video games. He does interviews and reviews, and it's really cool. So you should go check him out. That's nerdunemployed.com. Well, this episode, the three of us got together and we talked about all things DC. What's going on in the DC movie and TV universe, and why they just can't seem to compete with Marvel. Well, here we are, the DC dudes, and here we go.
As prepared as I can be, I assume. So we're talking about DC stuff today. I'll throw a little tease out there to show the geek cred in my family. Dave, I know your kids didn't really dress up for Thanksgiving, Halloween.
My kids don't dress up for Thanksgiving.
They should. Should see pilgrim hats and buckles. No, for Halloween. But my kids are young enough that they still do, and my daughter chose a very, non-mainstream comic book reference costume this year, inspired by the Teen Titans Go. She dressed as Raven.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, that works with cartoons, if that's what's popular with the kids these days.
Well, it was popular with her. I don't know if anyone got it, but...
Right.
She enjoyed it.
Yeah. Cool. Speaking of Teen Titans Go, are you still watching it? Are your kids still watching it?
My kids are still watching it occasionally, but not thoroughly that regularly. Like, I know there's a bunch of them banked up on our DVR, and from time to time they get to them.
How about you, Johnny?
I haven't been watching any of that. I have been intending to watch Beware the Batman, but...
Yeah, those I have banked on my DVR as well. I have pretty much all the Marvel and DC shows. There's dozens of episodes sitting on my DVR, and we only sparingly seem to get to them. Cartoons, oddly, have not been a high priority for my children.
Mm-hmm. How about, actually, speaking of DC and TV news, did you guys hear that there is going to be a new DC show on CW?
I heard that they were working on one. Are you talking about the Flash spinoff that they're going to do?
No.
Something else?
Our Man.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, I heard that today.
I had heard about that. That is an interesting one. I don't know a lot about Our Man, necessarily. I think I've seen him in somewhere, but I can't think of what.
Yeah, if I remember from what I heard, I didn't know a lot that much about. I think I remember him being a member of the JSA. But other than that, his original incarnation is that he would take a pill and he'd have superpowers for an hour.
Right. Yes.
So that was obviously they changed him throughout the years, but I think that was his original incarnation.
Explains the name.
Yeah. The most recent incarnation, he could see into the future an hour. And he could see crimes that were going to happen.
That seems more useful than only having superpowers for an hour.
Yeah.
Although if you had that ability and no other powers, I guess that's questionably useful.
Right. Well, it's also weird that, he would take a pill and get a power for an hour.
I don't know if that's any of the right message to the kids.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But although, what do you do with pills?
In this very Viagra-laden world we live in now, it would make sense.
Oh, that is a superpower, right? It lasts about an hour.
You can see every small thing. Like, Daddy, you're just like
It lasts less than 4 hours. More than that, then you got some problems.
You got to go see a doctor.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's an interesting choice. I mean, out of their giant stable of characters that they would go to Our Man, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do have a deep well, but that does not mean they have to start at the bottom.
Right.
You know, I don't know if they think, oh, well, Marvel started with Iron Man, and he was at the bottom of the barrel at that point.
He's not at the bottom. Well, he was at the bottom of the
barrel.
It was a different barrel, though.
Yeah.
That was a whiskey barrel.
Yeah, it was.
But I'd say he's always been, you know, B-list at the lowest as far as the, you know, the heroes in their universe.
Yeah.
Sure. You know what? I guess so. I mean, there's even other JSA members that they could have done, like Wildcat and Dr. Fate.
Yeah, Wildcat would be an interesting one because, you know, there are stories in the, at least the old continuity, I don't think they're holding this true in the new 52, is because Wildcat helped train Bruce Wayne when he was younger. So you could kind of have, you know, a young kid come in, get trained for a couple episodes, and, you know, yeah, you find out it's Bruce Wayne.
Right.
You know, that would make all the fanboys gasm, but...
I know, I guess in a way they would worry about doing too many shows about guys who aren't very superpowered, like Arrow and... well, they did Smallville. He was very superpowered, but...
Yeah. Well, it seems like Arrow is the antithesis to Smallville, where Smallville, everyone seemed to get powers.
Yeah.
In Arrow, they're avoiding powers altogether.
Right, right. And it's a clear message that they wanted to, they would want to do a Batman-type show, but...
Yeah.
I guess they just, I don't know, they have the movie franchise, so why convolute it as well?
Well, they are also, I don't know if you guys heard about this one, not, or two or not, the other show that they've been talking about besides the Flash spinoff was Gotham PD.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have heard about that one, and that's... Interesting. I'm not sure what I feel about that. It's, I mean, I think it could be interesting, but it's, besides being in Gotham and besides having maybe a wide array of these sort of teases at, you know, characters before they become the characters that we know them as, I don't know how it would be really different than, say, any other cop show that's on TV right now.
Right, and I kind of think... If you did Gotham PD, you'd end up in the same, you'd be tied by the same things that Smallville was, especially towards the end where, you know, yeah, they could do the first couple seasons just, you know, a young Gordon as a detective working the streets. But eventually, you know, people are going to be like, well, how's this tied to Batman or even...
Right.
Batman universe, they're going to want teases here and there, so they're going to have to throw in a mask here and there. And then towards the end, they want to hear, oh, look, Bruce Wayne just came back from, you know, from the Asia, you know.
Right.
He's been gone for so long. And then, you know, oh, someone saw a mysterious person dressed as a bat, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, and then they'll have to end it with Batman being in it. And, you know, it loses the focus of what the show is going to be about. I guess that's kind of why... Going back to the other one, Our Man, no one knows anything about him. They can get away with what they want to in the show.
Yeah, and it can essentially fail without any negative impact on anything. Which, I don't know if that's the bet they want to take necessarily.
Right.
A safe bet isn't always a good bet.
Yeah.
Right.
I doubt that they would build a show going, we could fail at this.
Yeah, yeah. That's not really the premise you want to launch a ship on.
Right. Well, I mean, they could really take GCPD, like, one of two ways. It could be that early years, you know, pre-Batman, and then you could have, you know, once you start running the well dry of, you know, Gordon just taking out regular guys, you could have Batman year one, and the, you know, the plan is to arrest the vigilante known as Batman, and then start building that sort of rogues gallery and how the police handle that rogues gallery. Or you could just jump ahead and be like, Batman's there, we don't ever talk to him, but this is how we handle people like the Joker, or how we handle people like Scarecrow.
Aftermath of like...
Yeah, or, you know, maybe Batman's busy somewhere else, and it's like, he's doing something else, we gotta handle this guy. This is how we handle it.
Maybe. But I definitely think that if they did the, sort of the Gotham early years, like before Batman is anywhere near being Batman, they definitely do run that risk of being the, you know, will they or won't they kind of thing that they were always fighting against with Smallville, you know,
right.
that typical, you know, that you want to see it happen, but at the same time, you know, when it happens, the show kind of has to be over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want it to overstay its welcome. So they're going to tease
right.
it out as long as they possibly can, and to the point where you're just sick of it, and they have to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this is driving me nuts, because it's like, DC does have a deep well of characters that, you know, we know won't make it into a movie. You know, even if we get the Justice League and they take, you know, your typical five, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and Flash, you know, then every, you know, okay, Green Arrow, he's got a TV show, you know. Trying to think of another good example from DC. Help
yeah,
me out.
There's a lot of things they could do. There's a lot of, you know, non-typical characters they could draw from. Like, they could do, I don't know, maybe do a Cyborg. You know, he's not a normal, regular member of the Justice League all the time.
Right.
There's a lot of directions they can go. But at the same time, if you look at their success rate with that as well, like, there was the Birds of Prey show a number of years back.
Right, right.
That didn't really achieve an audience, not because it was a horrible show, but just because it was too niche, I guess, or too outside of the norm of what people knew. And they just had trouble getting into it. You know, it rode that cusp of being recognizable characters that were only really recognizable to a handful of people. You know, skirting this Batman universe without actually having any of the payoff. So, you know, it's difficult. It's a gamble to do something that's too far from known characters. So I don't know. I don't know what the best bet is there.
Well, I mean, I think that, like, when they talk about GCPD, the thing that I want is not so much of a show like Arrow, which I've watched a little bit of. I think it's kind of cool, but, I, you know, more like The Wire. I want it to have a start and an end, and I want it, you know, I want them to take it as far as it should go instead of trying to figure out how to keep it going. And another great idea for something like that would be, like, the Suicide Squad, because then you could have these characters that are on the outside of, you know, like Batman, and even on the outside of the Titans, and you could introduce the world of DC through, you know, this very gritty sort of group of people.
Yeah. I think, though, the difficulty is, like, I think I've gotten the sense that with Arrow, for instance, they do want to start spinning off some additional characters that are potentially part of a larger universe. Something they definitely didn't stick with Smallville. Like, they created all these, they kept digging deeper in the well of these lesser known characters with, you know, well, not lesser known all the time, but, like, you know, they establish a version of Aquaman and a version of, you know, Cyborg and a version of all these, you know, Flash, of Hawkman and even some with the other, you know, Justice Society members and whatnot. But they're never, and even a version of Martian Manhunter, but there was never a sense that these characters were going to have any stay, that they might get carried over to something else, especially since they didn't really carry Superman over to something else.
Right.
You know, it's funny. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, and you mentioned Aquaman, you know, that's something else that DC does, and I don't quite understand it, and it drives me nuts a little bit, too, is that they did a pilot for Aquaman.
Uh-huh.
And I know it got mixed reviews, and it seemed like they got nervous and then said, okay, we're not going to do it. And then the same thing with Wonder Woman. You know, there was complaints about her wearing pants. And
I think it was more than the pants, though. Like, I think there was a lot of complaints, and the pants were just the tip of the iceberg. There was issues with the, you know, the characterization, the fact that she was, instead of being Amazonian, she was the head of some big industry or something like that. There was a lot of a number of complaints when it came to the Wonder Woman pilot attempt. As for the Aquaman one, yeah, I think they did get cold feet with that one. I never saw the pilot, so I don't really can't really offer an opinion on it. But to an extent, I'm kind of glad that they did, because what that gave us instead is they rolled that actor into the part of Green Arrow in Smallville, and I think that that's really, with the success of that version of Green Arrow, was probably one of the driving forces to them to consider making the Arrow show that we have today. Even though it's a different guy, that appealed to people enough, that characterization appealed to people enough, that they thought they could, you know, leverage that into something else.
No, I agree. But that's, you know, and that also kind of points to, you know, what I feel is DC's biggest problem, is they seem, and I hope that they're getting out of this now. I think they did with the Batman movies, at least. I'm not so sure about the Superman movie, is they seem too afraid to take different chances, you know, and instead of just saying, you know, let's get a rock solid writer like Whedon or even someone from the comic book staff, you know, any of the writers, let's say Jeff Loeb, to write us a kick-butt Wonder Woman script, you know, and screw studio notes, just let them do what they want to do, film it, and people are going to like it and watch it, you know. It's like, no, they're like, oh, well, people might think it's sexist if she's not wearing pants. Oh, people are going to want it more modern, so she's going to be a businesswoman. She's not going to be an Amazon. You know, like, no, let's do it right, you know. I mean, get Grant Morrison to write something, you know. He's one of the greatest writers on the planet. Have him write a script for one of these shows, you know. Like, take chances, because it's working for Marvel. Just do what they're doing.
Yeah, definitely.
The only thing that I see differently about that is that DC's been at the behest of Warner Brothers for so long. They don't really have the flexibility that Marvel has with our Marvel Studios brand to be like, if we try this and it fails, we failed. We don't have to, you know what I mean? We don't have to point fingers and be like, oh, the focus testing said because she is a modern woman that we need to do this. You know, they've been under the tutelage of Warner Brothers for so long that I'm sure they have their own methods of trying to put together shows and movies and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, though, that there's some degree of fear. You know, the costume thing you bring up, I think it's people have to get over it to a degree. But at the same time, I think they can accomplish similar goals without departing so far from things. I mean, if you look at, and you don't have to have even seen the movie to see this, but if you look at some of the, you know, the promotional posters for the characterization of Sif in the new Thor Dark World movie, you know, she looks badass. She looks, you know, she's a crowd away from being Wonder Woman the way that she's dressed already. And yet she's wearing leggings, you know, covering her pants. She's not showing a lot of cleavage or anything like that. She's wearing armor that's functional, that doesn't look like it's trying to be super sexy. And, you know, but yet she still looks appealing as a character. And I think that's not nothing. That's a pretty, you know.
Well, I don't know. Would you agree that a character like Sif is more open to interpretation than a character like Wonder Woman now?
Well, sure, but, well, no. Actually, no. I take that back. Well, yes, I think that she is, but at the same time, I think that people are open to interpretation on Wonder Woman as long as it's done reasonably and realistically for the right reasons. I think to take things into, like, for instance, if you saw any of the stills and costuming for the Wonder Woman pilot they tried to run with, you know, they gave her pants for, you know, I guess as a way to make it look a little bit less like she was wearing a bathing suit, I guess, for a little bit more degree of functionality, but they're tight leather pants. And yeah, those are not functional. Those are not, practical, you know. And then she was still wearing the the Wonder Woman strapless, you know, halter top that, you know, of leather and metal that is incredibly impractical. And I don't think that's necessary. You know, I think that for a character like Wonder Woman, I think you can take liberties to make her look realistic, to make her costume fit what she is. Because she doesn't wear those things to achieve a certain look. She wears those things to achieve a certain function.
Right. And you know, I've seen, you know, the original Wonder Woman in the comics wore a skirt. You know, and I understand it was a different time and women wore skirts back then.
Yes and no. It was also a nod to the fact that she had like a sort of Greek goddess
origin. That's what I'm saying. But now I've seen artist renderings. I've seen girls cosplaying Wonder Woman with a more Romanesque, you know, leather battle looking skirt. Like, you could do that where, now she's not showing her butt and she's covered and she fits with what her theme is and it's practical, you know? You don't have to put pants on her.
Right. By the way, I did send you guys an image. I don't know if you saw
that. Yeah, I saw that. I did. You're right. She is pretty much a crown away from being Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
True.
So,
yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, I wish I could figure out what the X Factor is and why they can't get, you know, Wonder Woman either in movies or television.
Yeah, I think it's an intersection of getting the casting right and getting the writing right. You know, it's hard to find the right people to make the right decisions about these things. Like, there's too many people involved in making these decisions, honestly. Like, you know, and Dave, you've spoken to it before, there was that running thing of promising every actress under the sun the role of Wonder Woman just as a means to get them to sign on to some other deal. And so it's hard to even take, even if there is a serious offer for that role, it's hard to take it seriously if when they're doing things like that. So, and again, I think there's too many, you know, there's too many studio executives involved between Warner Brothers and between DC, like all trying to steer the ship in different directions, that it's hard for them to come to a reasonable consensus on what image they want to depict and what they want to achieve with this role.
Right, right. It's interesting because you know, with Marvel, you know, you hear a lot of different things, but they were bought out by probably the biggest entertainment conglomerate on the planet right now, which is Disney.
Yeah.
And yet what Disney does is they buy them out, but then they sit there and they say, but you guys keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and until
not going to step in until you mess up.
Exactly.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a reason that Disney is the biggest entertainment, you know, moguls in the business, in the industry, because they know what's entertaining. They know how to entertain people, you know, and they've been doing it for nearly a century now. You know, sure, they've had their ups and downs, but the core of it has not changed. They still, you know what their job is. And they've had the same strategy with Pixar. You know, they've never gotten in the way of creativity with Pixar. You know, they've maybe asked them to sequel the things to death a little bit, but which is somewhat in the Disney way. But at the same time, they're allowing, you know, they understand that there's a place for the creativity and there's a place for the business end of things. And they don't necessarily need to overlap.
Well, right. I mean, it comes back to, you know, Disney buys, like, they want to get into computer animated movies. They find a company that's on the top of their game, partner with them, and then, okay, we're buying you. You know, they want to.
Yeah. It was a longer road than that, but yeah.
Right, right. But they want to get in, they want to get young boys interested in Disney more than women, yeah, more than girls, because girls are interested in the princesses, but they didn't have anything for boys. Oh, well, let's partner with Marvel, and then let's buy them because, you know, they have the boys market because of the superheroes. So it's a partnership for both. You know, like, yes, Disney's dumping money into Marvel to make these movies, but yet it's helping Disney bring in the demographic that they want. I don't think there was that mindset when Warner Brothers purchased DC, you know.
When and was that?
I don't remember the whole history.
Well,
for clarification, did they actually purchase DC? Did they own DC? Yeah, or are they just partnered with them?
They own DC.
No, they own them, right.
Okay. Yeah.
And I know it was sometime in either the late 70s, early 80s, and I don't remember the whole story around it, but because I never realized this, you know, until I was older that, you know, the Superman movies, the original ones, weren't even Warner Brothers, you know.
Yeah.
The Christopher Reeve,
right.
You know. So obviously it was sometime, you know, after that, you know, or within that time frame. But, you know, I don't, and it's funny, I wish I knew, I'm not as much of a DC fan, so I don't know, but I wish I knew the whole story behind how Warner Brothers got ownership of them. It feels like it was probably some kind of business deal of convenience.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. It wasn't anything dissimilar. Well, I guess it would have been dissimilar to what Marvel and Disney did, but I would imagine there might have been a less than spectacular year for DC.
Well, it might have been something like DC was in trouble, Warner mm-hmm. Brothers offered to buy them, you know,
yeah.
But never thought, oh, this is a treasure trove of ideas for us to make money, you mm-hmm. know, because you also have to look at the timing of when they bought them, you know, other than the Superman movies, I don't think comic book characters who were ever, you know, back then thought of as a money-making, you know,
right.
gravy train. Yeah.
Well, there was the, you could call it successful, Batman TV series from the 60s. So it's possible they wanted to, you know, saw a possibility in mining that further, but never really did it.
Well, they did, because they brought the camp in when they brought in Schumacher and...
Well, it took them two movies to get to the camp. You know, Tim Burton has a very low camp level.
There's some camp.
I don't know about that.
All right.
There's some in
lower than Shoemaker.
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly left knee on.
There were no nipples on Tim Burton's costume.
That's
no.
True.
Speaking of Batman... I cannot find the pictures online. I wish I could. But I heard today. Hello?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. My Skype said it wasn't responding for a second. I was kind of scared.
It's okay. Go into the light.
It's warm in here. Oh no, it's hellfire. Oh wait. Anyway. So I was listening to, I told you this morning, Ben, I was listening to Hollywood Babylon this morning. And Kevin Smith got to host a thing on Yahoo, which was for the Blu-ray release of Superman, I'm sorry, Man of Steel. And who's the director of those?
Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder, right. Zack Snyder, when they were done, said, Kevin, come here. I got something I got to show you. And he pulls out his iPhone, and it's a picture of Ben Affleck in the new costume.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I can't really reveal a lot about it. I don't have the picture here, but he said that it doesn't look anything like any of the previous Batman costumes from the movies.
In the movies, yeah.
Right. He said it's very close to the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, I think it's inspired by, and they bleeped that out of the show, and it drove me nuts.
I know what they bleeped out.
You do?
Yeah.
If you I'm sure it won't last long, but if you go on to Spodcast, one of the guys that was there, he wrote on the message board, he's like, oh, I got a shout out. People, like, jumped on him. They're like, what was bleeped out? What was bleeped out? And he said that the costume was inspired by Jim Lee, but probably based more on the new 52 look. So hopefully that means we'll get more gray than just black rubber. More like the Arkham City look.
Right, I was going to say, Jim Lee does a lot kind of along the styles of the Arkham City, where it looks like it's pieces of material, like, mm-hmm. riveted together.
Well, he helped design the original Arkham City, or Arkham Asylum game, so...
Okay.
I'm sure he had a heavy influence on the way Batman would look in those games.
All right, so I'm picturing something across between the Arkham games and kind of the Man of Steel, like, the way the material is with that, but, you know, gray with, like...
Kind of like a padded leather, maybe.
Yeah.
Or, like, studded leather, but not so... I don't know. I know exactly what you're thinking, though, yeah.
Yeah. So that would be cool. I mean, to finally not that I mind the armor, because the armor makes sense from a practical standpoint, but
it does. But it doesn't mean it has to look like armor.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, Kevlar is essentially fabric. You should be able to do a lot of things, have a very functional outfit without it being, you know, thick or solid or layered. You know, it could just be, a couple layers thick of functional materials and look like it's...
Yeah, and it doesn't have to look like plated plastic either, like...
Right, right.
I don't know how much you remember, like, the original RoboCop, those body armors that they wore. Didn't look like what you would normally think body armor would look. I know that's kind of a weird tangent, but it's in that same vein. It's like, it didn't look like what you would think body armor would look like, but it had that same function. And it doesn't have to be realistic. If we understand that it's meant to be armor, we understand it's meant to be armor.
Right, right.
All it has to do is protect them from a knife throw or, you know, a knife attack, and we understand that that's its function.
Right, that becomes clear. So, since you brought up the Arkham stuff, there is a new game. I don't know if you guys have seen a trailer for it. There's a new Arkham Origins game coming soon.
Yeah. Oh, it's already out. It's already out.
Yeah.
Oh, it's out. But
yeah.
I just think that the trailer, the commercial for that is brilliantly laid out. Like with the kid Bruce Wayne, you know, close up of the face, watching the bullets drop, and then like these phases of him aging and going through different trials and tribulations before finally becoming Batman. And I think that was pretty awesome on their part.
The game itself does kind of it sort of talks about that in not such a personal way, which is what's so surprising. The TV spot really kind of personalized Bruce's journey.
Yeah.
And the game is there to sort of... The whole marketing campaign was like, your enemies define you. And it was kind of like Batman's first night out against supervillains. So he's been doing it for a year or so. He's been fighting guys that are clearly beneath him, skill-wise and sanity-wise. And this is his first night out where he actually faces people who pose a more imminent threat, particularly the Joker. And they did a really cool thing in the game. I won't spoil it, but they did a really cool thing where it was like the Joker is explaining to Harley Quinn kind of like what it's like in his head, and you play that out. And it's really cool.
Hmm.
Like, you know anything about video games? No.
I don't know anything about...
So I guess you've played it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you know anyone who was involved with the making of this one, or?
Do I know anyone personally?
Well, or just someone, you know, like, have you ever worked with that studio, or?
No, they're new. Warner Brothers Montreal was the new studio that put
that's right, yeah.
They'll be handling it. I think they're going to annualize the series, kind of like they do with Assassin's Creed, which means we'll get a new Batman game every year. And the rumor is, Rocksteady, the guys that made the first two, are still going to make games based on Batman, and they'll do kind of the Batman in the future, but like in our time, and then Montreal handle like the backstory end of it. So they'll be meeting each other at both ends in a way.
Okay. Because I can't think of his name. The guy who wrote the first two, who wrote Batman the Animated Series.
Paul Dini,
yes. He was just on Batman with Batman, and they were talking about the trailer.
Yeah.
And they went
off. And that awesome Bloodhaven Academy idea?
Yes. They went off on a tangent. They should do a Bloodhaven TV series where it's young Bruce Wayne as a kid.
I would watch that show. Oh, man, would I watch that show.
So, you know, you're saying, here's my money, put it on now?
Yeah, no, I think that's fantastic. When I was listening to it, there's a part of me, I guess like a younger part of me, that's like, that's not the continuity, that's not how it happened. But, I don't know, I'm so enthralled by the idea. I was like, that would be a freaking awesome show.
But there was something, I don't know, I thought was kind of telling in that interview, and you would be closer to this side of the things that, you know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, and you could tell me if I'm wrong or not. When, you know, Kevin Smith asked him about, oh, well, did they ask you to write this one? And he's like,
yeah.
No, they kind of just said they're doing things a different way. They're going in a different way this time, and we're handling things internally. Like, mm-hmm. And they didn't have Kevin Conroy. They didn't have Luke Skywalker.
Mark Hamill, yeah.
Mark Hamill, thank you. Come in, and it seemed like, yeah, they just wanted to use staff writers and newcomers for the voices, like they were trying to save money or something on this game. I mean,
yeah, that's sort of the impression that you would get, but it's also, I can't imagine that Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy are really breaking the bank on that sort of, I mean, we all love Kevin Conroy, but it's not like we've heard stories that he's like the most highly paid voice actor in the business. He only does one voice, which is Batman.
Right.
Yeah.
So I can't really imagine he has the kind of clout to be like, I do everything, so pay me more. But you know, I think it goes back to that idea of them annualizing it. If they can divide and conquer. So while Montreal creates games in Batman's past and have Troy Baker be the Joker, when they do the other, well, my spoiler, but I don't think Joker is going to be in the next game. If they do the other one, that way, you know, like Kevin Conroy's time isn't divided between doing the game in Montreal and then doing the game that comes out of Rocksteady.
Okay.
So, and I think the same would be for development. It's like, I forget the name of the writer, but the writer that they had on this game, let me just look at it really quick. Well, they had lots of writers, but Corey May was one of the lead writers, and he's known for working on Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
So it's not like he was a throwaway writer or anything, but he's just a staff member at Montreal now. So they have in their own sort of employment really good, talented people to handle this kind of load, and that Feeny probably, you know, working with Marvel now doing his thing with the Agents of Smash.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, we can divide and conquer. When we need Feeny to write a story for the next Batman game out of Rocksteady, we can do it that way.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. I didn't think about it that way. So you've played the game. Does it feel like the first two?
It does. It feels a lot like it. What was interesting to me is when I finished it, the credit in the post game credits, there was like, they had all the rocks, a bunch of rocks for you guys in there. So.
Oh, okay.
Basically, what that meant to me is they just said, here, give us what you built. We're going to kind of make a story around what you've already built. So they didn't have to do anything from scratch. They added a few new elements gameplay wise. I was like, I kind of wish you didn't. But overall, it's almost exactly like City, except your area of Gotham is much bigger. They reuse a lot of locations though, so if you play City, you kind of know where you're going already.
Right,
and,
right.
But there's like a whole new section that you can go to, and it's really good. This is the first time you get to go to the Batcave and see Alfred and stuff, so.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really cool.
See, ladies and gentlemen, if you were wondering, who read those video game credits? You now know that Johnny reads them every time.
I stay to the end of video game credits, like I stay to the end of film credits. And not just to see a post credits thing, but like respect and admiration for the work that was put into it. I sit through it. Unless it's a game I don't care about, then I'm like, I don't know. I'm gonna walk away.
Or if it was a game you worked on.
If it was a game I worked on, I'd totally walk away.
Yeah.
It's like usually when I finish a game like that or like The Last of Us, like you spend so much time with it and it's such an interactive experience that, you know, even like a movie, you watch a really great movie and you want it, they teach you in things like film school, like to show respect to the people that worked really hard on it. So
right.
Being there, I know what that's like.
Yeah, that's true. So not to switch gears too much, but we were talking about Wonder Woman earlier, and you had told me earlier, and I can't remember who, you said there's a rumor that there's someone cast or being looked at to play Wonder Woman in the new Batman versus Superman or Man of Steel 2, whatever we're calling it.
I don't recall that. No.
What?
Yes. Well, there was a one thing that definitely happened is that Jamie Alexander, who played the part of Sif in the Thor movies, has had talks with DC. And there's one known female role in the new movie, but also a rumored role that there might be a Wonder Woman introduction, at least, in this movie. But the known role is there's also a love interest character for Batman. So it could go either way there. There's really no confirmation in either direction. But yeah, there's a lot of speculation that she could be the next Wonder Woman.
I had heard, who was it? My roommate was mentioning that there was a speculation on a rumor, of a casting in the movie that was for a female part. I can't remember what she said. She said some model was in talk. And she was upset, like visibly upset by this, because she thought that the model had no acting chops and spoke with a weird accent. And I was wondering, like, what female roles there could be in this movie. The only one that I could really think of was Marcy, which would be Luther's assistant.
Hmm.
And that could be, you know, that could even be a character that doesn't have any lines.
Right. Yeah. That's true. I don't know. I mean, well, there's a lot of rumors flowing around about this movie right now. And
there's more rumors than facts, really.
Right, right. Like everyone was saying, Cranston was going to be Luther, and then he came out. I was like, no, no one talked to me about this.
Right.
But, you know, I hope it doesn't suffer from sequelitis, you know, where they try to throw everything into this movie, you know, without officially billing it as a Justice League movie. You know, right. If they're saying it's Batman versus Superman, we'll concentrate on just those two in the picture. And don't try to throw too much of Batman and too much of Superman into it. It's got to be a good balance. You know?
Well, I would also venture, I guess, to say that, like, the casting decision that they make now might be more of a kind of like a post-credits thing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like how they did Benicio del Toro as the Collector. It's like, he had to be cast ahead of time for this scene.
Right.
I don't know. Did everybody see Thor in the Dark World?
I did.
We have, yes.
Okay, good. So you know that you know, being that scene before Guardians of the Galaxy, they would have needed to cast him and be like, hey, we need you in here to do this. Could be the same sort of manner. It's like, we're going to cast this character now. That's not to say that they're going to be in the movie as an integral role, but in a post-credits sort of scene, they're like, you know, and then this girl shows up, and she's got a lasso.
Well, Feige was, again, just on the Nerdist, and he was saying,
we listened to all the same shit, by the way.
Well, did you listen to that episode? I know.
Ben, I did.
I started listening to it. Okay. I haven't gotten very far.
But like,
he's for everybody else.
Right. They plan. That's how they plan their shooting. Is
right.
What can we show at Comic-Con? What's going to be bumper scenes on credits? You know, but like the Comic-Con is like, they plan a lot around that. So it's like, all right, well, this movie's coming out in 2014, but we want to start principal photography, you know, let's say a month before Comic-Con. So we have these scenes to show at Comic-Con to get people excited for the movie. And it's like, wow, that is a, you know, it shows how smart they are about marketing and, you know, how crazy it is, you know, to plan filming around stuff like that. But I have to imagine, like you just said, though, like they cast him early because they knew they wanted that scene at the end of Thor to help set up Guardians of the Galaxy.
Exactly.
Yeah. For what it was worth.
Yeah.
We know your feelings on that scene, Ben.
Well, you do. so, yeah, there's nothing cemented right now as far as the Wonder Woman role. I'm sure I project that if they don't deny it anytime soon, it's a very strong possibility. But yeah, there's apparently nothing firm right now on it.
Right. And then you showed me on IO9 this morning. Was it this morning?
Might have been.
Where they had all these sketches from the guy who did the art, the the layouts for the Batman movies.
Yes.
And he had all these character sketches on there. Superman, Batman.
Right. Let me find that so I can speak to it.
But I believe he also had Batgirl.
So there was one that was hard to tell at first who it was, just because it looked like a bat person uniform in general, but it was unclear because he didn't have a head to the sketch, at least the way it was cropped. But there was some speculation based on the way that the bat emblem was and the fact that the chest area looked a little more feminine than it would be appropriate for Batman, that it might have been Batgirl. But it was a collection of sketches, and it wasn't really, honestly, clear that was necessarily what it was for. Like, it was that it was related to that movie, for the new movie. But the guy whose sketchpad those things were from was definitely the guy who did, you know, costume design for the Man of Steel movie.
Right.
Here it is. I found it. Sorry. You can riff for a moment. Or not.
Link.
Concept artist named Jock.
Jock? I assume that's...
No, Jock. So Jock.
Never done it before.
And what about Jock?
So he posts a few shots of his work that he's doing on his Instagram. And the rumors are that it's upcoming stuff for he says one rumor is that it's stuff for upcoming Superman book he's working on, but it's also possible that it could be for the Man of Steel sequel, because he did do concept art for Batman Begins, Dread, X-Men Days of Future Past, and Man of Steel.
Right.
So... And the photo, and I can send it to you, includes Superman, I think a Batwoman, Wonder Woman, and a Batman sketch. If this loads.
Yeah, so it's, you know, but again, there's a lot of sketches on that page. And again, I also think artwork gets done and not necessarily used for movies as well.
Sure.
But, you know, are they going to try to throw too much in again? That's what I'm worried about. You know? Kind of like Spider-Man 3.
What was wrong with Spider-Man 3?
Oh my god, so much.
I'm joking. So, yeah.
Venom.
Yeah,
in Spider-Man. General, I just felt like Venom.
Yeah, I didn't like Spider-Man in that movie. Like,
sorry, the way you delivered that, I thought it was hilarious. I just didn't like Spider-Man in that movie.
Well, he was not a likable character in that movie.
No, that's true.
The whole
Spider emo,
quote unquote, yeah, emo Spider-Man was just atrocious, And even when he was not being emo Spider-Man, he was just whiny and annoying. It just was great.
I half hoped when he hit Mary Jane when he was dancing that it would just kill her like he did in that one book. I can't remember the name of the book, but he like killed that woman when he like did that backswing on her. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That's just Tobey Maguire trying to play evil.
Should have been crying more. Stupid face mother. Anyways.
But this is a DC talk. Anyway.
Yeah. Which is funny because there's like tons of Marvel stuff that I'm just like dying to talk about, but
Yeah. You missed that episode. We'll have to do another one though. There always seems to be more Marvel stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
More often than there's more DC stuff to talk about.
I would say there was another rumor that I had heard that Adam Driver was possibly in talks to be Nightwing.
I did read that this morning, and I didn't know who Adam Driver was. And I looked him up, and I was thinking, that's not someone I want to see as Nightwing.
I agree more.
I mean, no offense to Adam Driver. I'm sure he's a decent actor in whatever stuff he's acted in, but it's not the face of that part. Like,
no, I agree.
I don't know.
Okay, now I
have that Nightwing look.
I'm not. I have to look him up now because I don't know who this guy is.
I mean, he's a good actor for sure. For those of you who don't know, he's in like the show Girls.
Yeah.
He was in Lincoln.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So
he's TV ugly? No, he's even ugly for TV. Oh my God.
Oh.
Yeah. He's not a pretty boy.
He's ugly, people. I'm sorry, yeah. I'm putting that out there right now.
Right. I wasn't gonna go that far, but I was willing to say that he is not a pretty boy. He's not a pretty man. He is, you know, I think you kind of want in that role someone that's, I mean, it's not about sex appeal, but it kind of is, you know? It's not unimportant.
He has giant ears.
Yeah.
He does. I know.
And a crooked nose. It's like, really? Nah.
Yeah,
I think there's other people that you can get for that role.
Yeah. But whatever.
Let me be honest, I just hope that Nightwing doesn't show up at all in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that, once again, that turns into that sequelitis idea, where it's just like, there's too many chefs in this kitchen right now.
Yeah. I've seen at least two, like, non-official Kickstarter-level, you know, projects for, you know, Batman-adjacent type things with Nightwing in them that look better than that guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just, you know, you put a mask on him, you know, the ears and crooked
that mask isn't going to help that much.
Exactly. Oh, no. We know who you are under there.
It's not going to help the parts that need help. Like, the cowl would do a better job.
Yes.
Now, if they said that guy was going to be the Red Hood, okay. I'll give him that.
Oh, yeah. It's like a full red mask.
Yeah.
This
has gone down a bit of a dark turn.
Yes. So before we go down too dark, I'll change the topic, because we're also getting close to an hour. The final big piece of news that came out last week is DC, after 75 years, is moving out of New York and moving their publishing headquarters to California.
Seriously?
Seriously.
I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get a job.
Well, it's funny that you say that. You know, because obviously.
Where is that? I'm looking for that right now. Go ahead.
I have a lot of, you know, I have a lot of friends who are artists and writers. And, you know, a lot of them don't even live in New York. Steve Scott, who we've had on the show, he lives in Louisiana. He's worked on a lot of Batman books. A good friend of mine, Greg Horn, lives in Florida, who's done a lot of covers for DC. The artists and the writers don't necessarily have to be in New York anymore because it's 2013. People are spread out and, you know, they can talk on the phone. Here's the idea we have. They can draw up a sketch, fax it over to them, or just scan it and email it to them. Fax. Oh my God. You know, I just dated myself. But you know, they don't need to be physically in the same office anymore.
Sure. It's all digitally colored nowadays anyways. Yeah.
But
location is moot.
Like you just said, you're getting a job. I actually know somebody who works in the offices at DC. He's not an artist or a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, they told us we have our jobs. They're in California.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's
that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, the DC Comics is moving from New York City to join its digital and administrative office in Burbank, California.
Way out in the boonies.
Yeah.
That's where everybody is now, though. Marvel's out there. Marvel just moved. One of the coolest things that used to happen when I would go see a Marvel movie is I'd drive right by their Marvel studios because they were here in Manhattan Beach. And they moved out to Burbank, too, to join up with Disney. So everybody's gone out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, wouldn't you rather work for Marvel anyway? Oh.
I would if they were in Manhattan Beach.
Ah, okay. We'll email them and say, hey, Johnny's upset because you guys didn't stay close to his house.
Yeah.
You have to move back.
Like, bike down the street. It was kind of cool. But if it was, you know, like, I don't know, 15 years ago, I would have lost my mind.
But back to the DC move, it just makes me wonder, like, you know, obviously the quality of the books, it's the same writers and the same artists, most likely. I have to imagine there are some guys, older people that still work for them, that are set in their ways, you know, that are going to have issues with this.
Well, here's the thing that I would say is that I don't imagine that that would necessarily... I'd have to...
Hello?
I think we might have lost. Oh, there he is.
Oh.
We lost you for a second.
We lost you for a second. So.
Sorry. Okay. I was going to say, I don't think that that would necessarily mean that they would, you know, not have some sort of foothold in New York.
For certain work.
But, you know, like you said, the bygone days of artists and writers having to come into the office to do the work has been gone for years now.
Mm.
They all do it via mail or, you know, digitally. So the only people that are uprooting are, you know, editors, marketing, sales, that kind of stuff.
Right, right. And I kind of wonder if that's the thing. Like, some of those people aren't going to move. You know, they have family in New York. They have a life in New York. They're not going to get up and move to California. So
right. So that means that their job is now available for me.
This is true.
That's the bottom line.
That is the good bottom line.
But, and again, you know, I'm sure with the size of publishing companies are nowadays, you're not talking thousands of people. You're probably talking a couple hundred people that work in the office. And I'm sure some of them are going to move. But it's going to interrupt the flow of things, I think, for a while, too.
Sure, you know? Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they already have their creative, like, you know, one of their co-publishers, Jim Lee, lives out here.
Right.
Jeff Johns lives out here. So, you know, some of their higher, not talent, but, you know, some of their executive level guys already kind of live out here. So they've been sort of managing that idea. It does suck. The thing that I find weird about it is it sort of loses that romantic idea that the comics are made in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know Marvel still does it in a way, but, like, yeah, it was kind of one of those things. Like when I was even in high school and I wanted to be a comic artist, the goal was to go to New Jersey to learn how to be an artist at Kubert School so I could get a job in the city,
right?
Working for Marvel in DC because that's where comics are made.
Yeah.
Well, now you can just, you know, go
up
to Burbank.
I can do it anywhere.
Yeah.
But frickin' drive, let me tell you. but yeah, no, it is kind of interesting that they would move their publishing out this way. But I guess just to kind of
keep
everything close together.
And I think that actually is, it draws to something potentially that Dave kept, has harped about a lot. in that, you know, the question of why aren't the people of DC drawing more from their talent pool to write the scripts for these movies and TV shows? Now they potentially could. Those people are going to be right there, or at least the ones that stay with them and move out there will be.
I mean, you would think, but the creative talent already lives everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
Frank
but
Miller is not going to leave where he. I think he lives in Malibu, or did live in Malibu. He's,
yeah.
You know, he's been doing his work from home since.
Don't you know my theory?
Sorry.
No, it's
all right. Sorry. Again, it's marketing, sales.
Yeah.
You know, these are the
administrative
people that,
stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of hope, though, it's more of these guys, if they're there every day with the reps from WB, and they'll now have more of a voice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm on a conference meeting with you on the phone, and then I hang up and I don't talk to you for the rest of the day. Now I'm down this hallway from you in a different office every day, so I can just get up and say, hey, you know what? Jeff Johns or Snyder has a really great idea for the next Batman movie. Here's the script.
Yeah. And I think there's that. I think there's also potentially some degree of, you know, avoiding the competition to manage attrition. Because, and I don't know, this is completely speculation, but I'd imagine there's some decent degree of employee trading that happens between Marvel and DC being co-located in New York.
Oh,
You know,
definitely.
people going back and forth between the two. You know, if
Right.
by moving west, they sort of limit that. They keep people from, keep themselves from losing people, other than now, to Marvel.
Yeah. I don't know,
So.
over 75 years, I mean, I would have thought that they would have decided that. You know what, I think I'm gonna go with the theory of, no, everybody's tired of doing a 3 hour difference conference call, so they just bring it all into California so they can
Yeah.
talk to Warner Brothers when they need to, and they can talk to the movie
Agreed.
team when they need to, or the animation team when they
Yeah.
need to.
Agreed. And working in a company that has West Coast offices, I definitely can appreciate that there is the time difference makes a difference. It makes it hard to conduct business from coast to coast.
Right.
So yeah, you're probably right that that is a factor, but I think that they're not ignoring the side benefits of things like, you know, like what I mentioned of not being able to much less loss of people to Marvel or vice versa, and also the yeah the serendipity of having people right there with the studio people.
I don't know if that happens as much, what you're saying, Ben. You know, because the comic book industry, and I have to imagine that, you know, the talent side of the video game industry is like this too, in a way. But you know, you
There
work
is no talent side in the video game industry.
Whoa. Whoa. You know,
Sorry, sorry.
that's all good.
The
Look,
joke was
guys,
there for a
it's kind of true.
minute. Like, what I'm saying is that this doesn't happen with the IT guys, and this doesn't happen with the HR guys,
Right.
but the talent goes out to the conventions, you know. And if you stand and talk with an artist long enough at a convention, you'll see one guy walks up to him from DC and says, "I have this idea, and I think you'd be the great artist for it." Hands him a card and says, "Call me." And then an hour later, a rep from Marvel walks up to him and says, "I have an idea, you know." And then a guy from Zenoscope walks up and says, "Hey, would you be willing to work on a book for me?" And then a guy from an independent walks up and says, "Would you be willing to work on a book for me?" So, and they don't, you know, artists and writers don't directly work for Marvel or DC anymore, as long as,
That
other than
contract.
Jim Lee, who's now, you know, their co-CEO, but like guys like Steve and Greg and JG Jones, they're still, you know, they get hired for the projects they need them on, and then they're done with them. So the training's still going to go on, regardless of where the headquarters are of the companies, because it happens at the cons, you
Right.
know.
Well, there are certain artists that are like contracted to stay out of or stay in. I know like Joe Madden, he's contracted with Marvel for a little while. And I would probably say the same with like Feige and Jeff Loeb now. I think they're kind of in the Marvel camp for the time being.
Right, well, Jeff's heading up the Marvel Animation Studio, so yeah, I kind of think he's stuck there.
Yeah.
Wow, Ben got awfully quiet. Did we lose him?
No, I just got distracted by something shiny. No worries.
Ah, I see. Was it a mirror? Were you looking at yourself, Ben?
You caught me.
But I guess, you know, what's actually more interesting than that is it sort of kind of describes how the world's changed in that I would imagine 75 years ago, if you're going to publish a series of comic books, New York's the only place you're going to do it. You know what I mean? You're going to be close, connected to all the distribution,
Yeah.
all the printing,
Yeah, the
you
printing
know,
industry
all
was
that.
heavily stationed there
Right?
for a
So
long
now,
time.
75 years later, like, tons of print shops all over the world,
Right.
with new sort of digital printings and all kinds of crazy stuff. And you can do it anywhere.
Right.
It's so much easier now and so much more distributed. You know, you can do it. There is no restriction now. You don't need special equipment. You can get that special equipment at Kinko's. You know,
Right.
you essentially. You know, it's not as complicated a world now that we live in.
Very
So
true.
why not bring everybody together? And maybe Warner Brothers is like, dude, we're tired of paying the rent to the New York offices, just come out here.
I'm sure it's not cheap. Well, I think they instantly managed to you know, as much as I'm sure they're trying to keep a certain degree of headcount and get people to relocate if they're willing to, they're probably also welcoming the mandatory layoff that's essentially happening with this to a degree as well, you know, to save some money.
Hello?
Is Johnny there?
Well, there we go.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
I couldn't hear you for a second there.
So, yeah, I was just saying that I think that there's probably a degree of they're taking advantage of this move to maybe shed some weight.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. That is true. I mean, companies do that all the time where it's,
yeah,
you know.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yep.
My brother's going through a very similar thing right now. He's worked for Verizon for 20 plus years now, and they're moving their headquarters from Philly down to Florida. And they're like, oh yeah, you still have a job. It's just in Florida. So you,
yeah.
So yeah, there's a lot of people that are just going to be leaving.
Yeah.
They'll hire all new people.
At least they said that. Yeah. At least that suggests that if he were to opt to move to Florida, he still has a job.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, they're not going to say that to everybody necessarily.
Right. I think about that too. Like, you know, because Verizon's one of those few places that still offers a pension. So, you know, you leave, you don't get that pension. Well, I mean, it depends on how much you've paid in.
Well, what if they leave you? Do you get that pension?
What?
Is that the point you were going to make? Is that if they're leaving to Florida, then you can kind of claim that pension?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess it all depends on how the contracts are worked out. But I know, like, some places, if you leave the company, you forfeit the pension, so...
Right.
Is that common? I didn't know that there was a common practice. Because my wife's actually gotten pensions from teaching jobs that she's left.
Oh.
You know, pittances of money. But, you know, it's been for there for the taking.
Yeah, but teacher pensions are usually very well protected. Whereas,
yeah.
I mean,
that's
I've...
True.
I've heard stories of people...
Unions.
I've heard stories of people being let go, you know, 2 years before their retirement because, you know, if they're let
to
go...
To avoid paying out the
yeah.
pension.
Yeah. So it's...
That's
yeah,
true.
You're right. And there's definitely a weight-shedding factor to a move like that, but it'll be interesting. We'll have to keep an eye on it.
That's why I'm losing all my money in my 401k.
Because you're moving to California?
No, I'm that's where I'm investing it. I'm not saying it's going
to
last, but that's where it is.
Oh, okay, okay. All right, so winding this up, let's just real quick, final thoughts on the state of DC, Ben?
I think that they maybe are putting too many eggs in the next Superman movie basket. And an odd number of eggs in the Arrow basket.
Johnny?
I think that as excited as I am for the next Man of Steel movie, that, yeah, overall their film and TV projects seem to be scattered. But publishing-wise, I think that I don't think they've ever done better.
All right. Well, I think Marvel's winning, DC's losing.
Oh.
So DC better step up their game if they want to compete.
I'm going to make the argument that Marvel's clearly winning the movie race, but I don't know if there's anything better in books right now than what DC's doing.
That may be true, but they're not just winning the movie race. They're also winning the television race.
And don't put Superior Spider-Man in my face.
Oh, I will. I was about to. you're right. They are doing really good. Although it's in games, I don't know. It's a toss-up. I'm sure that Marvel Lego movie's doing, or Lego game's doing really well.
Yeah, it's doing very well in my house.
That Batman. So. I've been playing it. It's fun.
Yeah, it is great. I don't know what percentage I'm at, but I've unlocked a lot of characters.
Yeah.
And enough of the the multipliers now that, like, I have ridiculous amount of studs.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
I can get that billion for that Chivo.
I only have the times two multiplier right now. I'll have to find the other ones.
I managed to get the times two and the times four. And once you get those two, it's a lot quicker to get enough studs to get the other ones. And my kids have been playing some of the red brick levels to get those. So now I have the times six and the times 10. The only one I don't have is the times eight. So, yeah. But with all four of those on, that's times 480. Like,
yeah. You're
just raking in studs at that point.
Yep. I was just I was playing a minute ago. I was getting frustrated by this stupid Ghost Rider race.
Yeah, the races are tough. A lot of those races are really tough.
I'm surprised that game doesn't send kids, like, just crazy, because it's frustrating to control. It's fun, but control is, like, the least of their expertise.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just, my kids get frustrated with anything in that's time-based. Like, anything that they're on a clock for, the controller just gets handed to me. So,
did you ever notice what the major difference between Marvel characters and DC characters are?
Was it that DC characters suit up to look for crime while crime comes to find Marvel characters?
No. Something more basic than that. Most Marvel
capes.
Capes, yes. DC characters have capes. Marvel characters don't have capes. And
there are exceptions.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good one.
Oh, I saw.
This is the same way.
Hey, everyone. You just listened to an episode of Superhero Speak. This is Dave. You can reach me at dave@superheroespeak.com. Also, if you're listening to this through the website, did you know you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it? So, check us out there.
And this is Ben from Superhero Speak. Page your theories at ben@superheroespeak.com. And as you can also follow us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/superheroespeak.
This is John. You can reach me at john@superheroespeak.com. If you want, just our Twitter account @superheroespeak.
All right. Thanks, and check us out at those spots.